Kansas City. Hello, America. Hello, planet Earth, for that matter. And welcome to the first ever Heart and Goal podcast here in Kansas City. My name is Nate Bucati, and today, on the first ever episode, I'm joined by one of our hosts, Matt Beasler. You might know him from his years at Sporting Kansas City, winning multiple trophies. You might know him from his years with the United States men's national team, close to 50 caps, starting in every World Cup match in the 2014 World Cup. And now helping me help you get ready for the World Cup, which is less than 5 months away, if you can believe it. Matt, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing great, Nate. Happy to be here.
This is exciting. All right, let's lay out for everybody what to expect as we get rolling with what's going to be an epic podcast all the way up and through the World Cup in 2026. As I mentioned, I'm a Kansas City native myself, Nate Bucati here. I'm just a big soccer fan, basically, is what I am. But we've got an incredible lineup of co-hosts that are going to be helping me and help you get ready for the World Cup, starting with this man right here, the captain, Matt Beasler, a man who was born and raised in Kansas City. But we've got some other World Cup veterans that your buddies with, you played with, that live here in town as well, that have signed on to be a part of this show as well. Benny Failhaber played in the 2010 World Cup for the United States men's national team, will be a part of the show. Graham Zusi is a guy that you know fairly well, came into the league with in Major League Soccer. And Roger Espinosa, all guys have played for Sporting Kansas City. Roger played in the Olympics, the World Cup. But I think it's appropriate to start off with you because this is your hometown, man. This is where you're born and raised. So let's just start right there. What makes this place so special in your mind from just a living standpoint, but also the beautiful game?
Look, I mean, I've lived in Kansas City for pretty much my entire life. To me, this is normal. Like, the people of Kansas City, the Midwest hospitality, the fact that it's a sports town, like, all of that is normal to me. It wasn't until I got a little older and started traveling outside Kansas City that I realized, oh, wait, people don't know Kansas City? You know, like, Kansas City isn't considered one of the best places on earth? Like, to me, it is. So it's always been that to me. And so that's my perspective on it all. I get to kind of see it unfold and see everybody else figure it out. And that was one of the more rewarding parts during my time with Sporting Kansas City, being in the locker room, seeing all these players from all over the country, different parts of the world, Europe, South America, Central America, even all parts of the United States. They would come to Kansas City and I would watch them fall in love with our city. And it was a great experience for me. It was rewarding to see what I feel every single day, but somebody coming from the outside, and it's something. Kansas City it's a tough place to explain to others from the outside. It's a tough place to explain for people that have never been here. But when you get to experience it, and when you lived Kansas City, you know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, that's what has me most excited about this World Cup. One thing I want to say, too, about this show, whether you're a diehard soccer fan and you know the best players on each of the teams and you've already got your player pool draft going, you're a person who barely understands anything about soccer, but you're a little curious and you're excited because the World Cup's coming to your hometown, whether you know Kansas City like the back of your hand or you've never been here before and you're checking this podcast out because you want to learn more about it, we've got you covered. I think that this podcast is going to appeal to everybody in all shapes and sizes. We're going to give you some good content about what the World Cup itself is. We're going to give you some great content about Kansas City. If you already know the town, you're still going to learn some things about the city and you're going to grow in your appreciation and pride for it.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up great points. I'm excited to uncover some of the untold stories by myself and Graham and Benny and Roger and share some of those stories from the firsthand perspective of what it was like to play in a World Cup, experience a World Cup, but also to see some of the high-profile guests that come on this show. Because everybody that comes on the show, I think, has some unique perspectives and has some untold stories. Like I said, that I think the listeners are going to find interesting.
Well, let's dive into just a little taste, because we're going to have more time to get into your experience in 2014 in Brazil. But you talk about the opportunity that you had when soccer was really exploding in Kansas City in a way I had never seen it before. You guys had just won MLS Cup in 2013. You and Graham had become two of the biggest sports stars in all of Kansas City, and you go to one of the most soccer-mad countries in the world, which is saying something, in Brazil. Can you just give us a little taste of what that experience was like, maybe what your expectations were of going to a World Cup and how they lived up to those expectations?
Well, I can tell you that I'm looking forward to this World Cup a lot more than I was as a player.
Really?
I am.
Why?
I was nervous in 2014. There was so much pressure.
Yeah.
So, and that's the truth. I mean, it may be hard to believe. How can you look forward to this World Cup? You played in the World Cup in Brazil. Like, that had to be the best. In terms of my approach, I wasn't really thinking about this is the World Cup and what does this mean and this is a great opportunity. I was feeling the pressure to perform and the responsibility of representing my country, my city, my hometown, my family, my friends, my club. And that was a lot of pressure for me. And so this World Cup, it's a completely different experience, but in terms of my approach, I'm enjoying this one a lot more than the 2014 World Cup.
Yeah.
You know, going down to Brazil, the thing that stuck out to me is just the intensity. You know, you talk about passionate fan bases and passionate countries and the culture and soccer and the history. Brazil is one of the best. And from the second that you arrive down in that country, you can feel their energy and their passion that they have for the game of soccer. And so for me, that was a really cool experience that I got to have, just living it out every day and it being such a big part of their culture.
This World Cup 2026, first time it's coming to American soil since 1994. That was 2 years before Major League Soccer existed. One of the things I learned in researching for the book that I wrote was that Lamar Hunt tried to get Kansas City to be picked as a World Cup site in 94. There wasn't a professional league, really, to speak of in the United States at that time, much less that much of a robust soccer culture in Kansas City. When you think about how much has changed because that World Cup came to the U.S., which led to the Wizards coming here and on to Sporting Kansas City and on to the Kansas City Current becoming the most groundbreaking women's soccer team in the world, and now six World Cup games coming to Kansas City, it's really a pretty incredible journey, isn't it, in a fairly short period of time?
It is. Let me tell two quick stories, if you don't mind. The first story I'll tell is around that time, maybe a little later. So like, say, 96, 97, 98. I was 12 years old. I started traveling away from Kansas City, and I started playing soccer for the Olympic Development Program. It was called ODP at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really the only program that was in place at the time to identify the best players in the country. And so the program, the way it was set up, is you would try out for your state team and you'd make your state team, and then they'd combine some of the states into a region and you'd try out for your regional team, and then they'd combine some of the regions and you'd try out for the national team. And it was this player identification program. And I made the state team and I was representing Kansas ODP, and I started playing games and competing against players from all over the country. And I realized very quickly, people don't know anything about Kansas City
right.
in soccer. The story that I'll tell is when I first arrived to the regional team and I was playing against kids from Chicago and Michigan and St. Louis and Ohio, they would legitimately ask me if we practice in a cow pasture. And they would ask, like, how do you practice on the farm?
Yeah.
I'm not from the farm. I'm from Kansas City. They're like, what do you mean? That's,
yeah.
You know, do you guys even have, like, fields?
It's like, yeah. Running water?
We do.
Yeah.
And then, so fast forward to 2014, still carrying this chip on my shoulder. We were in Brazil. It was during the World Cup. Sao Paulo, where we were staying, they have this big city center. And they'd have all these TVs set up for the public, and there'd be thousands of people in these like little city centers watching games and watching the coverages, and they had national feeds, like satellite global feeds, and they kept showing the feed from Power and Light District in Kansas City, in Sao Paulo, Brazil. And for me, being a guy from Kansas City who had gone from this like 12-year-old kid, people asking me if I play soccer in cow pastures and why do I have an accent and all those things, to now being in Sao Paulo with the most passionate fan base arguably in the entire world, and they're watching my hometown, Kansas City Power and Light District, and they're saying, whoa, where's that place? Look at that place, it's packed. Kansas City, wow. That was a really cool moment for me, and it was like, hell yeah, that's my hometown. It was cool. Yeah.
Over the past couple of weeks, it's really started to kick into me because I've been doing all this work, you know, working on the book research project and things like that to get myself ready. We've been planning this podcast out. There have been some press conferences, everything, but all of a sudden over the past 2 weeks is when I've started to feel like, oh man, the wheels are really, really turning now. And on that note, our next guest is going to be the perfect person to start this conversation off with. She was a big part of the World Cup from the United States standpoint on a sponsorship side in 1994, and now she's the CEO of KC 2026. Pam Kramer is going to join us. We got a lot of questions for her coming up. This is the first ever Heart and Goal podcast, getting you ready for the World Cup in Kansas City. And we continue with the first ever edition of the Heart and Goal podcast. Nate Bucati alongside the legend himself, Matt Beisler. And speaking of legends, look, when we started this show, we were brainstorming the thousands and thousands of hours of manpower that we have behind this show. And we're like, we want to come out of the box strong here. We want to start this podcast with an authority. And there's no bigger authority on the Kansas City 2026 World Cup than the CEO of KC 2026. Pam Kramer is here. Pam, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? I'm excited.
There's so many things that you've done in this community, and now here you are in charge of, no pressure, the biggest event that's ever come to Kansas City. How are you handling it all? How's it going so far?
It's good. I mean, I also, in charge of is a pretty strong statement. I think it's a team effort, right? There are so many people involved, really team of teams, and the people involved give me great confidence from civic support, business support, elected officials. So I just am lucky enough to get to be the person out front.
I was having a conversation with you back in the summertime just about all this stuff. And you referenced to me your experience with the World Cup in 1994. I would love if you could relate that story, and particularly the one about tickets and bringing the tickets back to Kansas City. I just love that concept. So how were you involved in the World Cup in 94? And tell me about the tickets.
You bet. So the tickets, I do not want anybody to lose confidence over this story. But in 94, I was much younger then, I worked for Sprint, now T-Mobile. And we were a sponsor of the World Cup USA. And World Cup was a relatively unknown concept in the United States. Soccer was still young. You know, that tournament launched the MLS. And so there was a lot of education that had to happen. And Sprint had thousands of tickets across the nine host cities. And we got a notification from FIFA that we needed to come to LA, send people to pick up our tickets. At that time, there were no digital tickets. Everything was physical. So the Sprint team, we sent three people to LA and we rented a car and we stopped at Walmart and we bought American Tourister rollerboard suitcases. And we went down to their conflicting memories on where this was. I remember it being on Rodeo Drive. The other people there remember it somewhere else. But regardless, we get down to the place and there are Brinks trucks lined up on the street because all of the experienced sponsors had brought their accountants and their armed guards to get their tickets. We brought three people and suitcases and we went upstairs and we physically had to count 10,000 tickets and validate that we were taking them. And we put them in our suitcases and put them in the overhead bins and took them back to Kansas City. Now, looking back on that, and we were struck by we were like, oh, this is a whole different thing, right? Like we are dealing with something that people, if they knew what was in our suitcases, we might be at risk. So we learned pretty quickly, but I think it also gave me a sense, and then of course experiencing it firsthand, of the power of this event and the power of not just soccer but sport to unite people and rally people, and it launched my career in sports. So it was, tickets aside, it was a pretty pretty compelling thing.
The tickets made it back. I mean, is
the tickets
most
made it back.
Thing, right?
They did. Yeah. They did. I still have some of them.
There's something to be said about the paper ticket.
I know. I love the
you know, even for the memories, the souvenir. You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Spam same and bring the paper ticket back.
Is that what right? You're I think some of the big events now, and I've not been to a Super Bowl in a few years, but you have a digital ticket, and then when you get inside, they give you a commemorative paper ticket. Cool. We'll see. I don't know that they'll do that for World Cup, but it would be cool.
All right, Pam. So Nate said we're coming out hot. We're coming out of the gate hot. I'm going to come out of the gate hot too.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to put you on the spot.
Okay.
How are you feeling? How are you sleeping too?
Yeah, I feel excited. I sleep less, but I think it's. I'll give you a great example. This past Saturday, we had an event for our starting lineup volunteers. So the starting lineup volunteers did all of the screenings. They call them tryouts for the FIFA volunteers, ours and FIFA's. So they conducted 6,000 interviews over the last 3 months. Our team went down and served lunch for them just to celebrate, like thank them. They were everybody who came through the line. I mean, nearly every single person said, thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for, leading. I'm like, this is remarkable. These are volunteers who we are trying to show our appreciation to, and they're so excited to be part of this thing. That kind of energy really reinforces us and makes us understand in a deeper way how important this is to this community.
We've been talking a lot about what Kansas City means to us through the course of this podcast today. I've been spending a lot of time thinking about it. I got to interview you for the book that I've been working on that's trying to get to that answer of how did Kansas City get here? How did Kansas City become a World Cup city? You gave me a quote at that time, too, that stuck with me ever since. You said nobody celebrates big moments the way that Kansas City does. And we've seen it from the World Series and the Super Bowls and all of those things, but you've worked in sports for a long time in this town. What is it about Kansas City and sporting events in particular that seems to bring everybody together?
Yeah, I think there are two things. One is innate to who we are in any field, right? Even though we compete, and I'll use engineering firms, we've got a ton of great engineering firms, even though they compete for business and for, clients, we here come together to do things that benefit the community because we understand that if everybody rows in the same direction, like we're all going to get there faster. And then you layer on the sports, the role that sports plays in our culture and the way that we collectively have innovated, invented, created, shaped sports across lots of sports. Those two things, I mean, the Chiefs cheer for Sporting. Sporting cheers for the Current cheers for the Royals. There isn't this like we're all competing. It's we're all Kansas City. And I think those two things coming together, the people here want to see collaboration. It's innate to who we are. And I think we know because we're smaller, we have to do that. Like we cannot compete with one another. Mm-hmm. It's Kansas City against the world, right? And so I think the cool thing that's happened with this project is we're no longer happy to just be nominated or to be invited. Like we want to win, right? We want to be the best host city, and we're already showing, in my mind, signs of doing that. But it's because of that collaboration that's happening and the way people rally.
Yeah, good stuff. Pam, I could ask you 50 questions, and I wish we had that much time, but we don't. And we've talked a lot about a bunch of different things, but something we haven't talked about is the KC Momentum report that just came out. So I'm just curious, what are your thoughts on that? I don't know much about it at all. I know that there's been a lot of data that's included in that report. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so we really wanted, that came out at the end of 2025, and we really wanted people to understand all the good work that had already been done, the number of small businesses that were engaged, the number of volunteers that we had screened and who had applied for that, the way that we're showing up on the world stage. We're, one of the top searched cities on travel websites. And small fact for you, FIFA just launched WhatsApp channels for all of the host cities. They've not publicized them. They've not told anyone about them. We've not published anything in the WhatsApp channel. We have 7,000, this is 2 weeks old, so we probably have a lot more now, 7,000 followers. The next closest host city at that time was 300. So I don't know what it is, but there's something there that's happening, and we just want people to be aware of this groundswell. People are starting to pay attention to what's going on here, and they're like, what are they doing there? Cliff Illig, who's former principal owner of Sporting, really one of the key drivers of why we have the World Cup and why we're so successful. When I started this role, he said, I want people to say, who are those guys and how are they doing that? And I think that's exactly what's happening, right?
You bring up Cliff Illig, and when I was having a conversation with him regarding all these things, he brought up a phrase that he used. Cliff has phrases, right?
He has some
sayings that you catch on to and you remember them. And he kept talking to me about sustained impact. Momentum is big, because if we want to catch this wave that's coming, we need to build momentum, right? If you're going to catch a wave, you got to swim like hell before the wave comes if you want to catch it. But it's not just about maximizing the 2 months or whatever that it's here. It's about, how is this event going to have an impact on the city that carries forward for generations, right? And I mean, when you view it through that lens, that makes it a much bigger thing to tackle, I would assume, than just, hey, how do we get the most out of this 2 month period?
Yeah, and I think it's contributing to all the things that we're seeing, the ways that we're leading, because we're thinking about it differently. So we are focused on what happens in those 2 months, right? We want to do that the best, but we also are thinking about how this changes our trajectory as a city and a region, and how we change the way people think about us. If they know us, they may know us likely for our sports teams, maybe for our art museums, but they don't know what it's like to live here. They don't know what it's like to have a business here, to have a family here. We all know that. We want to show that. We want in 10 years for people to say, I moved to Kansas City because I went there during the World Cup and I saw something was happening, right? I tell people all the time, the reason I'm doing this, there are two reasons. One is because of that 94 experience, I think understand what this could be. And the second is, I have two adult daughters who grew up in a Kansas City where they saw, one of their core sports memories is the MLS Cup. One was a senior in high school, and she was late to her winter formal because she went to the Sporting match when they won that MLS Cup. And then our youngest, I took her to the Royals Parade in 2015. And then we all went to the Super Bowl as a family in 2019. They grew up in a Kansas City where we were winners. I want them to move back here once here. I hope the other one is back here someday, but I want them to raise their families here. And I want their kids to think this is a place with potential and promise, because I think the people here make it so.
I love that you brought that up, because that's exactly how I'm feeling. Like, my approach to this World Cup is different than any other World Cup. I'm really excited, probably more excited for this World Cup than I was even in 2014 as a player, because I get to experience this as a fan, but I also get to experience it as a parent. And I have kids, and I'm just so excited to expose them to Kansas City, to the World Cup, to the global game, like all the things that come with the World Cup. Could you touch on the fan fest?
Yeah.
Like what do we expect? How are you feeling about it? Because I know, again, personally, I can't wait to go down and check it out. And that's going to be one of the things I'm most excited about, is taking my kids down there to experience it.
Yeah. Well, you talk about leading. I mean, I have to give a lot of credit to Mallory Cage on our team, our director of fan festival and events, and then Populous, who's one of our host city supporters. They have created a plan that is so Kansas City. It's people are coming here for the World Cup, right? That's the main event. But Kansas City has a chance to show who we are and to merge those two things. And I think one of the coolest things about the World Cup, the soccer is great. The cultural exposure and commingling is so cool. When you have fans from Argentina understanding fans from Curacao, what does that look like? And what do we learn about it? And how do our children start to think differently about the world and themselves? So how do we put our best foot forward at FanFest? So we're thinking about it, that you've seen some of the renders with a giant. It's a 65-foot heart entrance, really focusing on the heart of America, the heart of the tournament, and our hospitality and who we are, authentic, welcoming. And that will be that main viewing area. So the diehard fan is going to get there early. They're going to line up when their team is playing. The Dutch Orange will be there, we know, on that third match. And then we have a secondary stage, more family activities. There will be perhaps programming that is less match focused. We want to expose the casual fan to soccer, introduce them to it, more cultural exchange, you know, a barbecue of the day, a barbecue of the week. We're not just barbecue. Let's bring in some of our other local restaurants. So really thinking about it, showcasing local talent, also some headliners. So it really is this combination of culture and soccer and how Kansas City sits at the intersection.
Where's that going to be again?
So it's at the World War I Museum and Memorial. So a little different than maybe other activations. So the NFL draft was both the I have to get my cardinal directions right, the south side and the north side. This will be on the flat side, which I think is the south side only.
Up on top.
And we're doing that for a few reasons. The capacity will be 25,000. We want to push people to other activations, whether that's a watch party at Shawnee Mission Park or in Lee's Summit. Mm-hmm. We want to spread people out so they see all parts of the city, the metro, and that there is economic impact in, you know, more places than just downtown. And then we'll have some down days, too, when we proactively say, like, go to a watch party out at Sporting Park or go to a watch party in the Northland. So it's going to be really cool. And that's the transportation hub, too. So our Connect KC 26 service, everything will run in and out of FanFest. So lots of good planning being done there.
When you say 25,000, that seems like a lot of people. But we're being told, really 600? And by the way, I've been asked that many times, Pam. Really 650,000 people? I know it's an estimate, but we're looking at that type of a scale of people coming to Kansas City this summer?
Yeah, I mean, remember, that's over the course of the tournament. Yeah. So they won't all be here at once. But for you know, a point of comparison, the population of KC Mo is 509,000. So even if they aren't all here at once, we're going to feel it in a way that's different than other cities. But we do want them to go beyond the city center. We want them to experience the city center. That's really important. But there are 190 community organizers that we convene regularly. And I mean, every single jurisdiction, suburb, community is planning something. We have a combined calendar because we want them to be aware of what else is going on. We want to make sure the public safety resources are not taxed, that we don't have 20 things planned on the same day. But that Argentina match, we may need 20 things planned because the Argentinians are going to be here in force and they're going to be looking for things to do.
That sustained impact part, I know you guys have an initiative where small businesses can go to your website, they can fill out a readiness questionnaire and get resources. And I think this is important. You tell me if I've got this wrong, but just the way I read it and the people I talk to, whether we push people to the all of the corners of Kansas City or not, they're going to be there because just a numbers thing. If you want to stay here in town, all the hotels are going to be used, which means you might be a small business in a part of town that thinks this isn't going to have much to do with me. I don't need to worry about this. You should be prepared, right? You should be doing what you can to get your business ready for what's coming. So what can people learn and how can they best maybe prepare themselves for what's coming?
Great question. So I think the key is setting expectations. So I always use the example, and I'm not sure it's a great example because I don't really know, but if you have a bridal shop, World Cup may not affect your business. Now, maybe there's some sort of correlation between weddings. Maybe we should do a mass wedding at the Fan Fest.
Yeah.
So we want to set the expectation that it's not every single business, right? But if you have a hospitality industry, a tent company, an event company, a personal services, if you have a barbershop or a salon, you're probably going to see an impact. So on our website, our program is called KC Game Plan. There's a readiness assessment. As you said, we're now doing training, cultural training. What time? We now know the 7 teams that will play here during the group stage. What languages do they speak? What are their cultural norms for time of day that they eat? Do they tip? These are the things that small businesses need to know. And that first match, Argentina, probably a lot more people than the second match, right? Still, we'll still have lots of people here for that Ecuador match, but the Argentina and the Netherlands probably bring a a higher fan base than some of the smaller countries and teams. So I think it's making sure that you understand what's coming, that you're prepared for it appropriately, and that you're plugging into it in the best way possible. So is your website up to date? Can your website be translated into another language? Those kinds of things we're making sure we're sharing with businesses so they know. And Tracy Walpley on our team is now meeting with embassies. They are starting their site visits. So the Argentinian embassy is in town this week. So she's specifically asking them, hey, you know, here are some of the things that we're hearing. Will visitors have a credit card? Or do we need to be thinking about cash transactions? They will have credit cards, right? So those are the things that we're trying to make sure we understand so we can pass that on to businesses.
Three-part question. What do you want the visitors to say about Kansas City? What do you want the media to say about Kansas City? And what do you want Kansas Cityans to say about Kansas City when it's all said and done?
So I want visitors to say, I felt at home in Kansas City. Like, that is my home away from home. I want the media to say, how did the smallest host city become the heart of the World Cup? And the last
Kansas Cityans.
I want Kansas Cityans to say, let's do that again.
Everybody's hearing news about who might be base camping here, and there's reports out there everywhere. We're waiting for the final word on that. When somebody comes to base camp in Kansas City, because that's different than the teams that are going to be playing here, what does that mean for the city? And what should people expect with whoever it is that's base camping here?
Yeah, and I think Matt can probably speak to this as well as I could. But the base camp is where it's the team's home base for the World Cup. And there are three things that are really unique to Kansas City. The first is our location. If you look at a map of all of the World Cup host cities, we are right in the middle. So if you are drawn into a group that's playing in LA and you hope that your team makes it to New York for the final, we're a very attractive location because you can get anywhere in a 3-hour flight. The second is our facilities. More than $600 million has been invested in soccer-specific facilities in Kansas City. Sporting's training facility is one of the best, if not the best, in North America. I mean, it's really amazing. The Currents facility, incredible. Rock Chalk Park. So none of that was built for the World Cup. It existed already. And the third is the experience. And honestly, when the teams have come through, and I give a lot of credit to Sporting and Alan Dietrich for being so focused on the experience, not just for Sporting, but for all three base camp locations, really helping the team visualize what it could look like for them and how we can contribute to the team's success. So that, remember that the team, a lot of the times the decision maker for base camp is the team admin, the team manager, and the head coach. All they care about is putting their team in a position to win. Mm-hmm. So how does our location, how do our facilities, how does the experience here contribute to winning? And it's a little bit of, look, people here are respectful. We understand what it takes to compete for championships. Nobody's going to mob the team. We're going to let you practice. We're going to protect your privacy. I think that has really resonated. And, you know, one of the great things about being the smallest is that we don't have 1,000 media outlets based here. Now, they're all going to be here if we get some of those big teams base camp. So that's the first piece of it. What it means for us is that, you know, the team's here, yes, but for some of those really big teams, their friends and family could be here as well. And then, you know, depending on if they're playing here or if there is a significant diaspora community that team draws, those fans will be here too. So all of those things combined, I mean, the impact could be really tremendous for us. And the longer the team is in the tournament, they will stay for sure through the group stage. They have the choice to stay beyond. The teams that have expressed interest have also expressed interest in staying beyond the group stage if they persist through the tournament. So that's really exciting.
It's important for people to understand the majority of the time spent during your World Cup experience is in your base camp city.
Where did you base camp?
We base camped in Sao Paulo.
But you didn't have any games in Sao
Paulo. We did not have any games in Sao Paulo. So typically the schedule for a player or a team during the World Cup is you're in your base camp and you're training for 4 or 5 days before a game. And that's where you're at. You're spending all your time there. You're practicing there. You're eating there. You're staying at the hotels. Even on your off days, you're in that city. And when you play a game, you hop on an airplane and you fly from your base camp city to your game city. And you do that the day before the game. So you fly the day before the game. You go to wherever. We went to Manaus and Recife and a couple other cities. We stay in a hotel in that city. We wake up. We play the game. After the game, we get on an airplane and fly back to our base camp city right away. And then we wake up the next day and we spend another 5 or 6 days in between our matches in our base camp city, training, eating at the hotel on the off days. And we'll hop on an airplane for the second game and do the same thing over and over again. So, and this is the longest World Cup in history. It could be over 50 days, I think. So if you're spending 50 days at the World Cup, assuming you make it all the way, I would probably guess you're spending 40 of those days in your base camp city.
So you said off days, because I know you said, look, the whole point here is if you're a big national team and you have aspirations to win the World Cup, it's focused on the game. Do you have some time, though, as a player, if you have an off day, to see some sights? Are you sequestered? Like, will the teams that are base camping here get any chance to actually view the city outside of training every day?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it just varies team by team. I mean, it just depends on how strict they are. And I would tell you that off days are very important. It's a long tournament. There's a lot of pressure and stress. And so I think most teams emphasize off days and being able to get away and remove themselves from the pressures. And maybe to Pam's point, you know, some of the countries that have come in have said, well, that's one of the reasons we like Kansas City, is because we can allow our players to go out and be maybe incognito and not be bothered versus maybe a bigger city. But I do think it's really important from the player's perspective to get away. And I'm excited for some of these teams, whoever it ends up being, to come into Kansas City, and I'm curious to see what they get up to during their off days.
Is that something that comes up in the meetings, like what there is to do in town, so to speak?
Yeah, and Matt's exactly right. It really varies by team. Some of the teams have looked at options for team outings, so, you know, what could they all do together? And then others are really looking for small group activities, so golf, as an example, right? What can they go do that really lets them detach, that is still private and fairly low risk for injury? Mm-hmm. I think it's been really, it's been amazing to see their response to some of the things that we have to offer. And that has been really fun, like to say, you know what, the Royals are playing. I'll give you an example, right? The Royals are playing. Would your players be interested in going to a Royals game? 100%. They're playing the Cardinals, by the way, at home during the World Cup. What better environment for people to experience American baseball? But those are the kinds of things we're, and then friends and family too. I mean, sometimes friends and family will travel with the team. Sometimes they will stay in Kansas City. So what can we do to help them celebrate? Maybe there's a watch party we host just for friends and family of the team. So we're talking to them about all of those opportunities.
Most of these countries, if they're big powerhouse countries, there are former players that are massive celebrities even to this day. Will any of those people be coming with their national teams to do public appearances around town? Is that part of the
process? I mean, I think it depends on the team. Okay. I think the and it depends on the activation that the team has here too. And FIFA will have legends in town, yeah, also, right? There will certainly be some of that. I think the media attention that will be on Kansas City, you've already seen some of that with the speculation. You can't buy advertising like, yeah, what we've seen in the past week. It's a tourism ad for us, right? Regardless of who's here, to have global outlets publishing pictures of our hotels is the kind of PR that I think the tourism industry would be grateful to have.
Well, we hope they feel at home here.
That's right.
And home is where the heart is. And this is the Heart and Goal podcast. Go ahead, Matt.
Pam, real quick, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for all of the work that you're doing. I mean, you're the face of KC 2026. I know it's an incredible amount of work. We were talking just about your sleep and the lack of sleep. But yeah, just thank you for all the work that you're doing, and you're doing a great job.
Well, thank you. I thank you both, actually. I think there is an investment in this sport that has gone maybe unnoticed and unseen for a long time. And it's really cool to see it come to the surface, because I think for a long time, people were promoting soccer and and not promoting really, but educating from a place of love for the sport. And so now getting to share that and having it be so visible is cool. So I stand on your shoulders along with lots of other people in the region.
Well, it's a big responsibility. We know you've had a lot to do. You will continue to have a lot to do. But I will say this, one of the best consensus builders that you can find in Kansas City as well. And it's something that you need in a town that's as complicated as Kansas City as well. So I'll echo Matt's thoughts. Thank you not only for the time today, but for everything you're doing. Will you come back and check in with us a little bit later on as we get closer?
Let's do it.
All right. That is Pam Kramer.
Thank you.
CEO of KC 2026. Now, we covered some big news here. We've still got more to come on the show. We've got our five aside, which is might ruffle some feathers the first time out. We'll see about that. That's straight ahead. This is the Heart and Goal podcast. And now it's time for a little segment we're going to do on the show that I'm really excited about. We're calling it Five Aside. If you play soccer, you know that's a popular pickup game, five aside. We're going to be throwing out some different items, different topics, and we're going to do a draft, basically. I'm going to pick my five. Matt's going to pick his five, but it's draft format. That means you take somebody, then that means they're off the board, okay? So, listen, we know that everybody that's coming to Kansas City for this World Cup, the first question they're going to ask is, where do I go for barbecue? And if you ask 20 different people, they'll send you to 20 different barbecue joints, and nobody's wrong. But it's controversial, Matt. Are you ready
for the first five-a-side draft? I am looking forward to this segment.
All right. Should we do rock, paper, scissors, or should I just give you the first draft pick? Because, like I said, you're more likely to be the first guy picked.
I don't know how you want to do this. I was wondering who's going to pick first. And I got another question for you. Are we doing like traditional draft back and forth, or are we doing the snake draft where you pick – and then I pick, and then round one's over, but then I lead off the second round. So
that's a good question.
You just want to go back and forth or snake draft?
I think we should go snake. That's more fair, right?
It is fair.
Yeah, it's more fair. All right.
I think it's more fair.
Okay, so I'm going to let you go first then, since you had the good idea, and then I'll get to pick back to back. So we're going barbecue joints in the Kansas City area, five aside, and then we're going to compare our two teams and let you weigh in on who you think has the better, who you'd take in a five-team grudge match.
And just to be clear, this is our personal favorites.
It's not
maybe what we would recommend of it. This is just our personal favorite. Okay. Number one, I will take Jack Stack. I'm taking Jack Stack because it's classic, it has history, but it's kind of like the total package of barbecue spots.
Mm-hmm.
They have a little bit of everything. It's a great place to go take a date. The sides are good. The ribs are good. The pulled pork. They just have a little bit of everything, and it's all really good. So I just think total package, Jack Stack, number one off the board for me.
I like where this is headed because I can already tell that we have a different take on barbecue, because there's like the white napkin barbecue. Like you said, you can get dressed nice and go to Jack Stack, take them on a date. I like the kind where your feet slide on the floor when you walk inside, you know, a little, I don't know what the word is, a little earthier, you know.
I've got some of those up my sleeve too.
We'll see. All right, my first pick is Arthur Bryant's. Now, this is so much about experience as much as it is about the food. And I do love Arthur Bryant's food. Their Sweet Heat is my favorite barbecue sauce out of the three that they have. But it's about when I was growing up as a kid, anytime we went to the Truman Sports Complex, Royals game, Chiefs game, whatever, that's where we stopped on the way. That my dad was like, we're going to Arthur. And he would say it like he would come home with two big bits of news. I got tickets to the game, and we're going to Arthur Bryant's on the way. And when I was a kid, I was like, I just was excited about the game. But as it became part of my, you know, the traditions of what we did as a family, now it's like I associate Arthur Bryant's with going to a big sporting event. So that gets me excited. And then how can I argue with Ted Lasso? Ted Lasso gives his boss a bottle of Arthur Bryant's barbecue sauce in the very first episode of the show and calls it some of the best barbecue sauce in the world. So I'm not going to go against you, Ted Lasso. I see you. I like you. I like your style. Arthur Bryant's is number one.
It's a good pick, Nate. I'm glad you picked that because that was number like 10 on my list.
See, there
I'm
we
not go. An Arthur Bryant's there, guy. Hey. Great.
All right.
I'm glad you took it number one.
Number two for me, I'm going with Gates. Gates sauce is my favorite sauce. The regular original Gates sauce is my favorite sauce in town. I love the fact that they shout at you when you're four people back in the line, and I'm always enjoying it when there's somebody that hasn't been there before and they're not ready and they get caught off guard by it.
What do they say again? How may I help
you? May I help you? And short end and fries is my order every time I go there. So Gates, I got Arthur Bryant's and Gates, two iconic barbecue joints in town right off the bat.
All right, so Arthur Bryant's Gates for you. Started with Jack Stack number one for me. So I got picks 2 and 3, is that correct?
Yes.
All right. I'm going to go Joe's Kansas City or Oklahoma Joe's. Another predictable pick probably by me.
It's a great pick.
You know, you're going to make fun of me for that pick.
It's
you just can't go wrong with that.
Especially the gas station.
The gas station one, absolutely. So Joe's KC number two for me. Go number three, I'm going to go LC's. And I'm picking LC's because I figured it was on your list.
That's why you did
it. And it is one of my favorite places without a doubt, so I wanted to make sure I got that on my list. So I'm going to pick LC's number three. Now you're talking about your vibe, right?
Yes.
The greasy floors, the white napkin.
Yeah.
You know, the beef on bun, the turkey on bun. LC's is where it's at.
Okay, so now I get to go with picks 3 and 4 for me. I'm going to go with Slaps. Slaps down at the base of Strawberry Hill. That's the origins of the Bucati family. We're not Strawberry Hill. We're Polish Hill right up the other side. The baked potato casserole is the best side dish outside of Joe's Fries in Kansas City. So I'm going to do Slaps, and I'm going to do Wyandotte Barbecue for number four. I'm going 2 KCK originals right off the bat there. So, or not right off the bat, but that's in my top four now.
Staying true to your roots, Nate.
Yeah,
I love
baby.
It. Two great spots. All right, so back over to me with picks 4 and 5. Pick 4, I'm going to go Q39. Love that place. I started going there when it was new, but just a lot of good memories. My wife and I used to go there for date night, so they've got a great menu and good barbecue. All right, so that's number 4. So my number 5 pick is going to be a place called Brobeck's Barbecue.
Heck yeah.
Brobeck's.
Very good.
The story behind Brobeck's for me is that I grew up in South OP, South Johnson County, very close to Stillwell.
Mm-hmm.
There's a place that my family and I used to go to called Stillwell Smokehouse. That was my first barbecue experience. I fell in love with the pulled pork sandwich at Stillwell Smokehouse. Unfortunately, Stillwell Smokehouse burned down, and so it is no longer in business. But the owners opened up a new place called Brobeck's Barbecue, and it has Stillwell Smokehouse vibes, and the pulled pork sandwich is just as good as I remember.
My sister lives close there, and so whenever we go watch ball games, that's usually the carryout place is Brobeck's. Great shot.
Yeah.
Is that your fifth?
That's my fifth.
That's your fifth and final. So now I go to my fifth and final. I'm going Char Bar. And there's a couple reasons for it. Number one, Meat Mitch would be up on that list somewhere, and he's the pit master for Char Bar as well, so I get to have a little bit of the best of both worlds. James Westfall, a dear friend and one of the pillars of the Kansas City community, and also has an interesting connection to the movie Anchorman. If you don't know that, watch the movie sometime and you'll be stunned that there is a real James Westfall and he lives in Kansas City. But Char Bar, the Womp Platter, if you're going to entertain a whole bunch of people, the big old platter of everything they've got, it's top notch. And I love the outdoor games that they have there as well. So you get to a little outside fun, especially in the summertime when people come here. There's some tough ones that I left off my list, but I'm pretty happy with my five.
All right, recap. Matt Beasler's barbecue list. We got Jack Stack, Joe's, LC's, Q39, and Brobeck's.
I've got Arthur Bryant's, Gates, Slaps, Wyandotte Barbecue, and Char Bar. Weigh in with us if you want on social media. Who would you take? If we line these two sides up, who wins? Who's got the better barbecue spots? I mean, and I think we got actually a pretty good cross-section of the city here.
I agree. I think it's a good matchup.
All right. We're going to transition from our five-a-side to 101. Give you a little breakdown on the format of this World Cup as we continue. We mentioned this earlier. It's the biggest World Cup in history. 48 teams. Used to be 32. So now all of a sudden you've got 12 groups with 4 teams in each group. So every team is going to play 3 matches, basically, and then we find out who advances to the knockout rounds. So in the past, it used to be just the top 2 teams from each group would advance. Now, you get the top 2 teams plus the top eight third place teams as well, which could make for some really interesting tiebreakers as things go on, right? When we try to see who gets separated as those top eight third place. Hopefully the United States doesn't even have to deal with that, but that's going to be something that's interesting to watch during this tournament.
Yeah, the setup's different. So this is the first time this has ever been a 48-team tournament. So like you said, we've got 12 groups of four teams. So each team is in their own group. They've got four teams. Like you said, they play three games. They play the teams in their group. And then we advance to the knockout rounds. Typically, in a 32-team tournament, you need 4 points to go through. Six for sure gets you through. Four more than likely gets you through. I think this year, you're definitely going to see 4 points get through to the knockout rounds. I also think you're going to see some teams that get 3 points that advance into the knockout rounds. So, to your point, it's just going to be a different vibe in the group stage. And I think there's going to be some very exciting matches that you wouldn't necessarily predict because of the new format of, hey, you win one game and you've got a shot to make it to the knockout rounds. Mm-hmm. I think that makes it for some intriguing games.
And so tiebreakers come down to the number one tiebreaker is goal differential. So whether you win a game by two or three goals could really matter when it comes to whether or not you advance to the next round. And then we could get down to fair play points, which is which team had the fewest yellow cards and red cards through the course.
Boy.
That could be interesting. And it could also go all the way down to FIFA ranking if you're still tied at that point in time. So we'll see if any of those things actually come into play when it comes to the teams that advance. Obviously, if you're a team like the United States, you're hoping to finish in the top two and avoid all those tiebreakers. But what it also means, Matt, is an extra round of the knockout rounds, right? Because in the old format with 32 teams, if you advanced, you were right into the round of 16. Now, when you get into the knockout round, you're going into the round of 32.
Group stage happens. You advance out of the group stage into the knockout rounds. The knockout rounds have 32 teams. From there, it is your traditional tournament setting, like March Madness, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you play your game, the winner advances. If you lose, you're out. So it will go from 32 to the round of 16, to the quarterfinals, to the semifinals, and to the final.
And we have a quarterfinal in Kansas City that could be one of the most epic matches in the history of the world if certain seeding plays out the way that it might. If we can get Argentina and Portugal here playing in that game, that could be one for the ages. No matter what, a quarterfinal is a massive game. I mean, no matter what, it's going to be an incredible atmosphere at Arrowhead or at Kansas City Stadium for
that's right. Yeah, so let me just tell you, the level of intensity between a group stage game and a knockout game, it's a big difference. Nothing against the group stage games, they're all important, but there's some gamesmanship sometimes. There's some, hey, we've won the first game, we're in a good position, you know, let's maybe play more conservatively. Let's hold back a little bit. Maybe we'll rest some normal starters because we're already through. None of that happens in the knockout rounds. The knockout rounds of a World Cup are some of the most exciting back and forth games that you can ever watch. So if you have an opportunity to watch, if you have an opportunity to attend a knockout stage game, I highly recommend it.
Yeah, it's a little bit like regular season versus postseason, isn't it? You know, in the regular season, there's tomorrow. There's rarely an actual must-win game. But when you get into the knockout rounds, everything is must-win. And then you're starting to talk about the potential for penalties, which is always incredible drama. You've been on the positive side of some of those, obviously, when you won MLS Cup in 2013. So we could see that as well. I mean, it's the intensity level is, well, how would you describe it? You were part of it. You know, the knockout round.
Yeah, it is. I think there's a couple different, I guess, some interesting storylines with this World Cup, with it being the biggest, most games ever in history. One of the things that I'm thinking about just in terms of being a player is you've got to play an extra game, right?
Yeah.
Because it's the round of 32. They've added a round. And so to win the World Cup, you have to play eight matches. And I want to be careful not to say you have to win eight matches. You don't have to win eight matches. You have to play in eight matches. You've got to win your last five matches. But if you remember the last World Cup when Argentina won, I believe Argentina lost or tied their first game. They lost their first game of the World Cup, and they ended up winning it. So, but I do think one of the storylines is depth. It's the most games played. It's 8 games. Depth is really going to be a factor in this World Cup, more so than it has been in the past. And that's why I'm leaning on, you know, if I have to say, well, who's the favorites and who's going to win? I think teams with a lot of depth have a major advantage in this World Cup.
There's a little 101 for you. We're going to keep teasing that stuff out. We'll get into more and more details of what you can expect. Matt and I did a bonus episode when the draw came out where we kind of break down the United States draw. One of the teams we're still waiting on out of their 4-team group, but we get into what it looks like for the United States. We also talk about the draw when it comes to what teams will be coming to Kansas City as well. You can hit us up on YouTube and watch that episode, get all the information there that you want as well. So I think we did it, partner. I think this was a pretty good, you know, for the first time out of the box. You know, we're not into midseason form yet. What does it usually take, about 10 matches to really get your team clicking and everything?
No, it takes less than that.
Less than 10?
I would give you five. Five matches, yeah. Five.
Number one, this wasn't so bad.
I agree.
We got it done.
Let's go.
Hey, make sure that you follow us on all the social media channels. Search for Heart and Goal Pod. Follow us. Interact with us. Please give us a 5-star rating, like, subscribe, do all those things because it actually really matters. We want to get this out to as many people as possible. We want everybody in Kansas City to know all the information, where to get the information, how to maximize this World Cup. And if you're coming to Kansas City as a visitor, we want you to watch this podcast and be as ready as you can to love Kansas City as well. So that's going to do it this time around. For Matt Beisler and Pam Kramer, I'm Nate Bucati. Thanks for watching and listening, and we'll see you next time with Heart and Goal. Mm-hmm.